हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
You have this one? No.
Just now coming.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. No, 5 minutes means 20.
So
30 seconds.
Oh, 5:10. Because 10 can mean 40.
Yeah.
Like that. 20 minutes is an hour. Huh? Yes.
Before.
Yes, you get before you die. Okay. Okay. Why in this verse does Mukti Devi give up her dependence, nishtam, on the religious practices enjoined by Varnashram? Nard Muni explains to King Prachinabarhi as follows. When a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he's favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-15. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on his purport. At such a time, a devotee makes friends with another devotee, and his engagement in material activity ceases completely. At that time, he attains the favor of the Lord and loses his faith in material civilization, which begins with Varnashram Dharma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks clearly of one's becoming liberated from the Varnashram Dharma, the most exalted system of human civilization. At such a time, one feels himself to be perpetually the servant of the Lord. Position taken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. But so here, when we mean giving up, we're talking about the mentality. Right? That's the basic principle. Is that In other words, you're not performing the Varnashram duties because of the benefits they'll get or that it makes society better. Right? The idea that through the improvement of society one will be happy, that attitude is lost. Because the only thing that really is going to make anybody happy is Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense?
This is like the instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to Prabhupada about the British. Can we compare that? We don't care who's ruling.
Yeah, we don't care who's ruling. The point is there must be a ruler, just because that keeps things working. But the only point of keeping things working is then you can do your service. You know, if it's total chaos and you don't know what it'll be from one moment to the next, then, you know, expanding the glories of devotional service becomes more difficult. One can sit anywhere and chant, of course. You understand? So, see, it becomes balanced when the element is primary is Krishna consciousness, then it's supported by endeavor. Right? So that endeavor has a technical, it has specific mechanics. Right? So it's not that those mechanics is what makes devotional service. The mechanics are the expression of the devotional service. Just like if I want to travel, right, get from one point to another, then I can walk, I can use a bicycle, I can use a scooter, right? I can use, you know, a rickshaw, I can use a car, I can use a bus, I can use a plane, a boat. So those are just mechanics how to travel. The important thing is the traveling, not what you're traveling in, right? But you see people, they're attached to their cars and their bicycles and their, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they give that up. That doesn't mean that they give up the use of it. It means they give up that's what's important. Okay?
I don't know why she's looking at me.
Okay.
Internal things.
Huh?
Internal
connections are happening. Okay. Yes.
Sometimes when we preach, that's more on the outcomes.
The outcomes. That's because people can relate.
Sometimes even the devotees, they are more interested in what they're going to gain. So
yes.
They are more focused on pleasing Krishna.
Yes. So that because that's just the beginning stages. Is going to be have that element. One's going to go from sakam to nishkam to actual, you know, development of prema. Right? So it's natural it'll be there, but it should be that in discussions there is contemplation on that point. Right? See, is that there's, because we do deal in the external or in that secondary aspect, then when you say we give up varnashram, then the idea is, oh, we don't have to follow it. But at the same time, as we give up all material endeavors, oh, but it's all right to, you know, be a householder, all right to have money, to have a job, to have this and that. But if that's okay, why wouldn't varnashram be okay? Why is it varnashram is dropped? Right? If you'll notice, it's so easy for tribals to drop varnashram, as if they're so renounced. You know, it's like kids, you know, little kids when they're eating, it's very easy to renounce forks and spoons, you know, just because it's a trouble. It's so much easier just to get in there with both hands and eat, right? So there's a misunderstanding is that, no, it's the attitude that this is what's going to make us successful. I think ideas that, oh, if we all follow Varnashram, establish Varnashram, then the society would be so nice, everything would be so good. That's not what's going to make it good. Connection to Krishna makes it good. Otherwise, if it's about Varnashram is good, then the smartest are already doing that. They're already living Varnashram. They do it in everything of their life. Their cleanliness, their everything, their deity worship, their clothes, their, you know, they do everything. So the difficulty is we're not distinguishing between the primary and secondary. So the primary is what is there, then one gives up the attachment to the secondary. So naturally, since the primary is main, you'll use whatever it takes to get it done. You know, just like let us give an example in Kalari. It's a traditional form of South Indian martial arts. So the first, I think it's the first, yeah, first 2 years of training, they'll teach anybody, whether they have character or not, because the general thing is everybody in the village knows how to fight, so if they get attacked by anything, then surprisingly everybody comes out with sticks, you know, and stuff, right? But then the third year they teach more secret things. The secret things means how to use anything as a weapon. To someone without character, you only want them to know how to use a weapon as a weapon, right? But when you have someone who has character, then he can learn to use anything as a weapon. Like the example was given, we were sitting there, we were discussing this, and you know, I had the Achman cup there and that. And so this colory person, he was showing is that okay, here, you give me the Achman cup, and I'm sitting doing my Achman. He says, then you attack me, right? So you go to attack, he takes the spoon and he's got it, and then he gets your arm and you can't move. You just use an Achman spoon. His point is that you can use anything. So what happens? That means you're shifting from the weapon is the martial art to the martial art is the martial art. You know? And then therefore anything can be engaged. So it's just understood if you go into any of these things, that's the practical, or the, like in the business world, they'll say thinking outside the box. So that means you can see anything to connect it to the economic field, or administrative field, or to the art, or, you know, somebody is in practicing their art and they do something different than anybody else, but it's appreciated. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening here. It's not that it's not used, but you're getting down to the essence. So therefore, giving up varnashram means you're giving up that varnashram is actually the important element. It's devotional service is the important. And if it's favorable, then you're naturally using varnashram. If you're functioning, if you say give up varnashram, then what's left is going to the forest and sitting under a tree. It's not that give up varnashram means automatically then by default you follow Malecha culture. That's generally how it's taken. But otherwise, how do you socially interact? So if you need to socially interact, varnashram is there. If you don't, then you can sit under a tree. So that's the whole thing. You switch from that the secondary has importance, like here, what he says. At that time, he attains the favor of the Lord and loses his faith in material civilization, which begins with varnashram dharma. So we're not talking about, you know, so if you're giving up human civilization, automatically things lower than that are given up. You know, animal civilization, gross sense gravity, all this is all given up. So, because that's one line. Dharma, artha, kama is one line. Right? Then the other line is moksha. Right? Because you see, as those who are interested in moksha, they're also following dharma. They follow all the varnashram things very strictly. Right, but their purpose is moksha. Well, the karmis, their purpose is ultimately sense gratification. So it's you're switching from the secondary to the primary. And by doing that, then the secondary is whatever's available. If the varnashram is available, you'll use it. If it's not, you'll use whatever else is available. You know what I'm saying? You always use the next best. It's just like you go to the market, whatever the best vegetables are, that's what you're going to pick. Let's say you're late getting to the market, so the best ones are taken. What do you pick next? The next best. You don't pick the worst. Right? So between varnashram and modern culture, there's a lot of steps. So you don't automatically take that. You know, so even if you take that, what do you take? What's better? You know? So that's what Prabhupada said. You're going to dress in Western culture, you dress like a gentleman. Right, he didn't say, get one of those putty knives, go out, you know, to the gutter there, scrape a bit, and whatever you get, put that on. He didn't say do that. You know what I'm saying? But if that's all that's available, then that's what you wear. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea. The whole thing is about devotional service, and then whatever is the best way to express it in that situation, that's what's used. So, not catching the difference between the primary and the secondary, then we're going to use these results. Because one is, in preaching, okay, you're trying to inspire others that, okay, you have this goal, but there's better goals. That's okay. But it shouldn't be that that's reflected in their own understanding. Like that. Because Prabhupada didn't really... It's mentioned, if you get bhakti, then the material is taken care of. We don't preach the material is taken care of. Right? That just comes as a side thing. You know, so let's say if you buy... you go to the shop and buy something to drink. You get a bottle with it. right? Yeah, but I don't have to talk about the bottle. Hey, if you go in there and, you know, you'll get a bottle, you know? It's just like, yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that with devotional service, the material things come along, because as we see, the material energy and the spiritual energy are the same person. So naturally, whatever is required, that comes along with it. That's the whole thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. So that's the whole thing. Because as I mentioned, if you discuss this point about primary and secondary, wherever you go in the world, you get these amazing blank looks. Because it's something that has just not been discussed. Because it's taken the homogenous together, but you often know what homogeneously is together. You know?
Is this also why they have such trouble figuring out masculine and feminine?
Yes, because then you have to distinguish. Because the whole idea in the modern is you make no distinction. But at the same time, you make all the same distinctions you would always make. You know what I'm saying? So things are always, it's the element of using the intelligence to discern things is not a popular. Before, that was the whole thing about cultured, educated society, was the use of the intelligence, you know, so therefore logic and rhetoric and you know, knowing huge amounts of facts and figures and unique things and unique viewpoint was the way to look at. Now it's about feelings. I feel like it. You know, so it's all about how I feel rather than... Yeah, because the point is if you think, the point is you go back in time, that man who thought and could analyze and do all these things, though he was a common person, how did he spend his money? Was he careful about his money? He was very careful. But now, if you just feel and think, how are you about your money? It just goes. So therefore, economically, that's the thing to preach. You want to expand money, you make it, it's all about feeling. It's all about you. It's all about, you know.
You're worth it.
Huh?
You're worth it.
Yes. Yes, you're worth it. Is this, yeah. So the whole thing is, because we're not distinguishing between these things. Because the point is yes, means the spontaneous platform on one level you can say is higher. But that's if it's spiritual. The spontaneous platform on the material is lower. Right? Rag in material is lower. Rag in spiritual is higher. Right? Is that what it is? Yeah. Yes, we have very advanced. They're definitely all on the platform of Raga Nuga there, yes. You know, even some of them probably even Raga Atmika, you know, they're like totally absorbed, you know. And people are glorified for that. Like, what is it? What is his name? Casanova. He's a Ragatnika, and then there's so many. Yeah, then there's Raganuga, and then most people just are, you know, only. You know, it's way beyond that, right?
Aspiring.
Yes, neophytes, just aspiring to. How you say? Agyana Sukriti. Very good. Okay. You understand? So there's this subtle thing that is being brought out again and again. But if you can catch that, good. And if not, then anything else that you can catch is still of value. Because it's connected to the Lord. Right? It's still of value. And by functioning in that connection to the Lord, then everything will work. Everything will happen. But there is the point where it distinguishes, as we said it's coming up with discussion with Uddhava. It's just this distinction between Bhagavan and Paramatma. One, there's no difference, but it's no difference if you see Bhagavan is Paramatma and Brahman. Right? He's the central teacher. The others are expanding from him. Right? But otherwise, if we see separate from that, then it's the Lord. And you're going to be purified, you're going to advance. Right? Devotional service was developed, but not as much as. Because we'll say the residents of Gorkha had devotion. But they're only seeing up to the Paramatma level. These are subtleties that are coming out here. In this verse, Sanatana Goswami glorifies Bhakti Devi, stressing her exalted position amongst the Lord's devotees. Liberation is the fourth Purushartha, goal of human existence. To impersonalists, it is elusive and highly sought after. Yet, personified liberation herself aspires to be Bhakti Devi's maidservant. This superiority is confirmed by Kapila. Right? So the impersonalists, they aspire after mukti, which is very hard to get. But Mukti Devi herself wants to be a maidservant of Bhakti Devi. Because that's the real thing. So this superiority is confirmed by Lord Kapila. My dear mother, devotees whose hearts are always filled in the service of my lotus feet, and who are prepared to do anything for my satisfaction, especially those fortunate devotees who assemble together to understand my qualities, pastimes, and form, and thus glorify me congregationally and derive transcendental pleasure therefrom, never desire to become one with me. And what to speak of becoming one with me? They are offered a post like mine in my abode, or opulence like mine, or even personal association with me with similar bodily features. They refuse to accept because they are satisfied simply by being engaged in my devotional service. Right? So then what's happening here? Right? Because here we're saying opulence means personal association with the Lord. But it's not about the personal association. It's about serving the Lord. Is that
not like a social position?
It's not a social position that, hey, I'm the guy that hangs out with the Lord. You know, which is nice because it's connected to the Lord. Being on the same planet as the Lord, associating with the Lord, having the same bodily features, because it always reminds you of the Lord. You just look in the mirror, you remember the Lord, you know. Right? Having the same opulence, so then you can use all that nicely in the Lord's service. So they're all devotionally nice. But what's being pointed out here is that there's a position beyond that where it's just about the service. They just want to render service. Because now the residents of Vrindavan, are they on the same planet as Krishna? Right. Do they have the same, are they associates? Right. Do they have a similar kind of opulence? You know, in the way of having things and this and that, they have. Right. And similar features means they don't look exactly the same, but they have the complementary features of how they look and everything like that. So they have that, but is that what's important for them? That's the point. It's about just serving Krishna is what's important. Yes, it's the activity too, yes. Yes, yes.
So this is the kind of liberation that is in the
second. Yes. 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 So there it's okay. Because it's about majesty. So it fits. Because basically you're worshiping the Lord because he's God. Right? So basically you're dealing with the Lord in that position as Vasudeva. Right? We're not talking about the Chakra Vyuha here, we're talking about that original, the Mahanarayan, right? That aspect. And then he'll have his expansions of which particular deity that you appreciate. So they have that same understanding that, let's say if they worship Nisringa, Nisringa is an expansion of Mahanarayan. So they're worshipping Mahanarayan, but as Nisringadev, or as Vamana, or as Varaha, or wherever that they're... that taste lies. So that principle is there. They just don't take it beyond to Swayam Krishna. Right? So In that aspect, then, that Aishvarya sets that flavor, and so then these elements then are okay within their, that system. But what we're talking about is then going beyond that, where it's about just Krishna himself. It's not about Krishna, the opulence, right? Majesty means it's the opulence that the Lord has. He's God and he has opulence. So we're talking about here, it's just about the Lord himself. Just he's what's so nice. It's not that he's nice because he's God and he has all this. It's about he's nice. Yes.
Is acceptance of devotional service in preference to any kind of vibration, is that exclusive to Krishna, or is it also for Narayana?
It means you'll have the, an understanding of it, but it's not generally discussed. But basically you can say is that in that full understanding of it, that's only for those who are, you know, worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan. And then specifically it means those, the Gaudiyas who are worshipping in Braja. Because Braja is going to be the highest element because, see, Vaikuntha means full majesty. Braj means full sweetness. Now everything in between is a mix. Yes, like Ayodhya will be more majesty, some sweetness. Dwarka will be majesty with more sweetness. Mathura more than that. But then you have these lower elements of lower Goloka and Vrindavan where there'll be the opulence, but sweetness is even more prominent. Or where you get up to where the sweetness is there, it's sweetness, but it doesn't have that surrender because there's no... You don't want to go through the difficulty of separation. You want to always be with the Lord. So it has that element of being an associate of the Lord. Right? So there's a touch of it. Though it's predominantly sweetness, there's only a touch of the other. Does that make sense? So you have all these gradations in between. And so Braj is the full manifestation at the end of sweetness. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. The vast gulf and happiness experienced by the Bhakta and Jnani, not to speak of the Karmi, is explained by Dhruva Maharaj and Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this case, you're only talking about the distance between Jnana and bhakti, because jnana is liberation, it's outside the material world. But the distance between there and devotion is great. So we're not even bringing up about the distance between jnana and, you know, liberation and sense gratification. That's just like, you know. Yeah. Yeah, because it's like if you're talking about an ocean compared to an unlimited ocean, it's like a drop. You know, so we're not even going to talk about an actual drop. You know, it's just not even...
Not on the same page, not in the same library.
Yes, yeah. Other side of town. Yeah. This is explained by Dhruva Maharaj and Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear Lord, the transcendental pleasure derived by meditation upon your lotus feet, which is enjoyed by the pure devotees, cannot be approached by the transcendental pleasure derived by the impersonalists through self-realization. How can the fruit of workers, who at most can aspire to promotion to the higher heavenly planets, understand you? And how can they be described as enjoying a happiness similar to the devotee's happiness?
Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.10.
Where is this footnote 4? No, got to find it myself. Yeah, I don't see it. Oh, well. Wow. Something about liberation. Yeah, I don't know. It says here, these are the four spiritual practices traditionally employed by the four ashrams to attain liberation. So I don't know where it's connected. It says, brahmacharis chant japa, grihasthas perform ritual sacrifices, vanaprasthas observe strict penances, and sannyasis vow never to re-enter family entanglement. Yeah, so the whole idea is that through that they can liberate themselves. Wow.
Yeah. Got a whole convoy.
Oh, these guys.
Definitely something from.
Yeah, maybe they're rain.
Yeah, but they're not on this side. Yeah, it seems to be just a...
Yeah, these are like the big ants, but they're smaller.
Okay, then, verse 9. All glories to the all-ecstatic name of Lord Murari. It makes one put aside such tasks as meditation, ritual worship, and social duties, dharma, dhyana, pujadi. Footnote 5. Oh, here we go. These correspond to the yuga dharmas for each age, as listed in the Vishnu Purana 6.2.17. What was accomplished in the Krita age by meditation, in the Treta age by ritual sacrifices, and in the Dwapara age by worship of the deity of the Lord, is accomplished in this Kali Yuga age by loud chanting of the names of Keshava. If a living being even once takes the Lord's holy name, the name will grant him liberation. Footnote 6. The Lord's holy name's potency is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. One is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for the relief from sinful reactions. Even if one, right, because otherwise you can do ritualistic sacrifices and penances. You know, like, walking down one full side of the Ganga. I think it's down one side and back up the other. It means wherever you start, you walk down till you get to the mouth, walk up, go all the way up to source, then back, then come down to where you were. That's one thing. Or you walk along one side and you just only accept what, you know, you can get in your, how much food can fit in your palms. You know, different things like this you can do, or big sacrifices or that. They'll remove the sin, but they won't remove the desire. Therefore, it's not recommended. But chanting the holy name, it will get rid of both.
This is what we call penance?
Yeah, that would be penance. But they're recommended duties. Mm-hmm. So that's why it has the element that's connected with austerity. But we're looking at the physical difficulty that comes from the performance of the duty.
The recommended duties?
They're recommended methods of purification. Right? Shastra gives them. They're recommended if you have faith that by performing physical difficulties or that you will actually become purified, then they're recommended. If you don't have such, misconceptions, then just chanting and hearing and chanting and remembering in the association of devotees is all that's recommended. So when Manu opens, he opens with that. But because people aren't going to take that seriously, therefore you have all these other things that are there.
It looks better.
Yeah.
Just
like I remember once. It's just if you do service to the Dham, you get purified. So I remember one parent once asking that one boy had done something wrong, right? Not that he cares about he'd done something wrong. He's done something wrong towards his own child. So he's asked. So he thinks he has the right to ask me, what will be done about this? What justice will be there? That my son gets justice. And so I mentioned he'll be doing a lot of cleaning and stuff. Cleaning the bathrooms and this and that.
And the father was indignant. You know, how is that going to, you know, accomplish anything? You know, how does that prove justice? He was not at all. So he had to, you know, just, you know, basically, this is the way we work. You know, you purify the heart. But he wants to see external, like that, because it's his son. You know, if it was anybody else, he couldn't care less. Or if his son had done something, oh, you have to be passionate, you know, children make mistakes, you know, like that, standard. So that's the thing, is that there's a faith that if somebody does something wrong, then you have to see some external, you know, kind of thing, punishment. But that's what the sixth canto is all about. Sixth canto, with the story of Ajamiel, it says that it's got nothing to do with, prayaschitta doesn't actually do anything. Because if you don't remove the dirt from the heart, then what's the point? Yeah. So it's only by good association. So we see, so when a devotee would go off track, when Prabhupada was here, he'd see that he's in good association. And if they're very senior in that, he'd just have him travel with him. So it's about association that corrects, not about these others. So that's what it's meaning, is that once one takes up, that will gain. You have that faith. Like that. Because the other thing is, we have faith. That where will that come along with? What will that be a symptom of? Right? That'll be a symptom of that you think the opposite of that, I perform good work, that will make me happy. I will actually get benefit from pious work that generates material facility. And that will make me happy. So therefore, if something is done wrong, then there must be justice that you know, something is taken away. Right? Because the whole point is, I get facility, I'm happy. So therefore, if someone does something wrong, they should be made unhappy by taking away facility. Right? So that's what it means before. One has faith in material civilization. When it's actually, no, it's only by devotional service that one, I'll be happy, and two, someone else will be purified. Right? So that's the whole system. So it's that's why you see Yudhishthira Maharaj is emperor of the world. He's using all that in the Lord's service. It's not that he has to, you know, he figures we'll give all this up, go to the forest. Right? Or Sudama Brahma, he has nothing, and he's using that for serving Krishna. He has a little bit of chira. That's all he's got. Right? So he takes that. While Yudhishthira Maharaj, when Krishna comes and visits, there's a whole kingdom there at his disposal. Right? So it's not about that. It's about the service. So whatever facility comes due to one's conditioning and one's position, that's what's engaged. But it's not about the position or the facility. It's about engaging what you have in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. 4:10. You're thinking, that was quick.
Yeah. But we tend to forget all the time. We hear the same thing.
Yes, yes.
After some time, we forget the same thing.
Yes.
Again,
yes. 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 But it's just, it takes time. Old habits die hard. Right? So that's why there's 9 cantos to get rid of old habits. Because you see here now this is starting to come out. Because Uddhava mentions this, you know, quite directly. It's been mentioned all the way through. But it's also an interesting thing, is just reading, it's in one of the purports, the term itarata. It means non-devotee. But the word is also in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. So itarata meaning indirect. So the non-devotee is interested in what's indirect. The devotee is interested in what's direct. So the primary is what's important to the devotee. The secondary is what's important to the non-devotee. So therefore, the term itarata is used for non-devotees. Is that... interesting, right? It's all connected so nicely.
So it used to mean the other. So there's Vaishnava.
And the other, yes. Yeah, everybody has that, too. Yeah. Yeah, the others. It's funny. So, the Vaishnava equivalent of Goys. Every culture has one, right? You have your own, and then the other, right? Like that. What's it? Yeah, yeah. Like a Japanese is Japanese, and then there's, I think, what was it? I just, huh? Yeah, something like yeah, then everybody else, you know. Oh, okay. Virginies. Yeah. Yes, everybody has one. There's us. I mean, it just goes down to us and them. Right, you know, that's the simplest.
Sometimes
you say, believe us and the rest. Yeah, us and the rest, right? Rather than them, it's just, you know, why even give some stature? Right? It's us and everything else. Okay, six, where are we? Okay, the holy name's potency. One is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful actions. Reactions. It means the other actions are only recommended because people don't have faith in this. Right? Therefore, then the other things are there. Even if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, one will achieve relief from material bondage if one chants without offenses. Ajamil, for example, was extremely sinful, but while dying, he merely chanted the holy name, and although calling his son, he achieved complete liberation because he remembered the name of Narayana. Right? So that's the advantage of having had a, you know, been trained in youth to serve the Lord, because he was, you know, a strictly practicing Brahman up to when he became deviated. Like that. The Prabhash Khanda of the Skanda Purana also confirms this. O best of the Bhrigu dynasty, the holy name of Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet and the most auspicious of the auspicious. It is the transcendental fruit of all the Vedas and is purely spiritual. Whoever chants it but once, whether with faith or with contempt, is liberated. Right, so when you walk down the street and, you know, people make fun of us, right? They're liberated. Right? You know, so we're thinking, oh no, people don't like, we don't, you just liberated half the street, you know.
Temporarily, but still.
Yeah, but still, that's better than, you know.
Then ignore it.
Yeah.
Better than ignore it.
Yeah.
So that means they're free from whatever volume of sinful reactions they do.
Yes, but yes, they're free. But the difficulty is because they're conditioned, they'll go on committing the same sinful act, but they're starting from zero. So now, because the volume of sin is less, there's a chance they could come in contact. You know, just like you have, you know, we told those stories where devotees mention how they became devotees, that they had a friend who was wanted to go to the temple. They didn't like it at all, but because their friend was going, they had nothing else to do, so they went with them. They didn't like anything, but, you know, they liked the prasad. So they took prasad, you know, like that. They'd argue with everything, you know, atheistic, this, that. But then after, you know, 9 Sunday feasts, they joined. Right? You know, so the whole point is because they're in that, they're going to say Krishna's name, right? Because everybody else is, so they're going to say it at some point. Because, well, you know, Krishna Supreme, who said Krishna? You know, like that. Something they're going to say. And so they're so that freedom, so the amount of volume of sin is less. So then, so much easier to become a devotee. But unless you're out there, they know who you are and you're cultivating, then how does it work? Otherwise, you walk down the street, they don't know you're a devotee, nobody gets benefited. So, like that.
I'm just thinking about the new temple. Prabhupada is very bold in presenting the whole cosmos to the outside world. Check this out. And they will disagree like anything, but
They'll be here looking at it and disagree.
Yeah.
They'll see the deities, hear the holy name. Yeah, that's the whole thing. They don't like, who cares? You know, it's not like we have to adjust to what they say. You know, because that's the whole point, is that whatever philosophy they have, then after, it's not like now, there was a, you know, how you say? There was, who was I discussing this with? I don't think it was with you about the string theory and the, what is it, string theory and particle theory within quantum. There's two schools, and they basically really hate each other. You know, it's whether, you know, the atoms are connected in strings or whether they're just, you know, separate particles. You know, does that make sense? So they work together or they work separately, right? Well, you know all this? Or? So you're a string theorist or a particle theorist? Huh? I couldn't hear. Oh, I see. Okay. Not that you have an opinion either way. Okay. So this one devotee was explaining that these go way back. You know, they go back quite many decades, these concepts. But he's saying that more and more as time goes, they can't... the string theory is not having enough evidence to support it. Like that. So something that's so prominent and can create so much... Then after a while, then they can't support it and the mood changes. So that's the whole thing. There's no value in trying to make scientists happy, because scientists will never be happy anyway, by definition. You know, being a speculator, you have to come up and change and everything like that. So it's no use. So the whole point is if we stick to what we're doing, people may like it, may not like it, but because they're in contact with it, they are purified. And from being purified, if that contact is regular, then at some point they get some benefit.
Have to please the scientists because they will never be happy. And we don't
you can't be. You can't please them. You can't please the materialists. You can't please them. If you're not a devotee, you can't be pleased. Doesn't matter what you do, they'll come up. Because remember what we were discussing before about who's successful and who's not. The person who identifies, I'm not successful, I want to become successful. It's a identity. So even if they are technically successful, they'll still not be successful because they think, I'm not successful. And so they'll always be going for a goal, an unattainable goal. So that's the whole thing. The materialist, they'll never be satisfied because the material energy is always adjusting, always changing. So the experience is, so you can't be satisfied on the material platform. So why try to please a position that can't be pleased?
Yeah. They want to be called.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Yes.
There's a conversation about the theory of theory. One devotee asked Prabhupada how to present something to the scientists. And Prabhupada said, we're not interested in what the scientists say. They're prejudiced. We are prejudiced our way, they're prejudiced their way. That's the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no middle ground.
Yeah, there's no need. There's no need to. Because this idea that, oh, we have to please them. Why would you have to please them? You know, just like I said, okay, we're preaching. We really aren't taking into consideration, you know, the heroin addicts, you know, the junkies and this and that. You know, do we have in our bathrooms, you know, in our toilets and our temples, those little things that where you can put all the needles and everything like that? And, you know, we don't consider that, you know, does anybody care? You know, is that the whole point is it's a matter of what you can do is what you do. We can present our philosophy. Why try to please someone who can't be pleased? So this idea is that we have to please the academics, we have to please the scientists, we have to please the common person. That's because we have faith that there is something of value there. So that means it's a symptom that we still have faith in material civilization. And that's what Dhruva Maharaj is talking about, is that when you actually come in contact, there's nothing. Because he wanted a kingdom bigger than Brahma. How are you going to get that, you know, five-year-old kid? You know, it's like they want, you know, you can't say they want the world. You have to say they want beyond the universe, right? You know, so. But he said when he met the Lord,
then that whole thing just went away because there is nothing there. So that's the whole thing. We may have that, but that's a prejudice. No, you have to please that. Since when? Every devotee that I knew in the beginning, they became devotees and there was no connection with them and the academic field other than they went to a university, but they weren't connected to it. You know, in the way of that they were trying to be academicians. And they all became devotees. You know, how many were scientists? I don't know of any that were. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that who really, what real influence do they have? The common person takes them as authorities, but it's not that their life is governed by them. You know, the common man's life is not governed by the scientist or the academic. You know? Is that what it says? Yeah. So if you really wanted to please somebody, you'd have to get into, you know, your high level, you know, politicians and business community. Now that's something that actually has an influence. Yeah, but nobody talks about them.
Probably the business community.
Sorry?
Probably the business community more so than the politicians.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So you're established rich in that. They're the ones that would be more running. But we don't talk about trying to please them. They say, oh, they're just, what do we care for them, you know? Like, so all it is this middle class, kind of educated, liberal perspective, which has been there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talked about it 150 years ago, that, you know, that's there in the middle. It, middle class means they think like that. So it's like, hey. You know? So there's no need. We do what we do, and they like it. Nice. They don't like it. Who cares? You know, how many scientists are on the planet that are that developed in astronomy that they could come and complain? You know, yeah, very limited. Very limited. So it's not, you know. Yeah. Okay. Does it go on, or that's... Yeah. Okay. That holy name is the greatest source of eternal pleasure and is my very life and ornament. And yes. Okay. One who realizes the value of Harinam will rely favor chanting over, probably just will favor.
Yeah.
One who realizes the value of Harinam will favor chanting over other kinds of spiritual effort. The gradual scheme of Vedic progress elevates one via the following activities. Ritualistic sacrifice, deity worship, and yoga meditation. However, even when performed in devotional service, all these processes are troublesome compared to Harinam. Therefore, an intelligent devotee knows that by focusing his attention on Harinam, he can easily achieve the results of all the above methods. Devahuti, the mother of Kapiladev, confirms this in a prayer to her son. Oh, how glorious are those whose tongues are chanting your holy name. Even if born in the families of dog eaters, such persons are worshipable. That this is where we made it, right? You know, okay, yeah. Persons who chant the holy name of your lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting the holy name of your lordship, they must have bathed at holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33-7. Right? So, in other words, one has that faith, that means because one has the piety. So one either already has that faith comes up quickly by the association, or by association and chanting, one will develop that piety.
The results of all those other.
Yes, means, yeah, that's what Gita, Krishna gives that one verse, that the results of all those pious activities that are recommended in the Vedas, you get all the benefits of that by devotional service. So either you've already done those,
you've come to devotional service, or how you say, you are developing them in the process of devotional service, like that. But basically, if one hasn't done all these, one doesn't have the piety to be aware. But it's still not this that is there. It's by getting the mercy of the devotee. So you get the mercy of the devotee because you're inquisitive. Being inquisitive is generally a symptom of human life. Human life means someone who is pious. Right? So there's a connection, but at the same time, it's...
Lastly, Srila Sanatana Goswami describes his own relationship with the Holy Name. It is everything to him, the only ornament of his life. Ekam jivanam bhushanam me. 10. I bow down to Sri Krishna Chandra, the bestower of unconditional mercy. In the modern age, he has appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to distribute the taste of pure love. So Sanatana Goswami 500 years ago is using this term modern age because the popular culture at that time is not Vedic. So it's the modern age. Does that make sense? So in other words, this concept of the modern age is always there. The concept of the middle class is always there. It's just a matter of the modes are correct, then it comes up. And it doesn't, it fades away. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's all. It's not that it's a new thing that's happening here. We're new, we're unique, we're different, we're special.
No,
we're the same old chewing the chew that's always gone on.
Can you say something about the Sanskrit term for modern?
That, I'm not sure. We'd have to look. You know what I mean? The other one. Is Varnashram, then there's the other
the
one.
Other one.
Gnostic, yeah. It'd have to be Gnostic. Sri Sanatana concludes his invocation of auspiciousness by offering respects to his worshipable deity. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the first spiritual master of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Among the varieties of rasas in the spiritual world, the rasa found at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is most precious and exquisite. It should therefore be extremely difficult for anyone in the modern world to obtain. But Lord Chaitanya, being supremely compassionate, gives away this rasa to unappreciative, reluctant, conditioned souls. Intelligent and fortunate persons will accept his mercy, voluntarily serving his Sankirtan mission. Yes. Yeah. So getting this bhakti should be very difficult because who in the modern age has the piety? But Lord Chaitanya, by his Sankirtan movement, that generates the piety. Right? By hearing the holy name, then one generates the piety required to be able to take up devotional service. Because otherwise, if one's following the Vedic, one would have to do so many other things to qualify. So they are, it's just not going to happen. Verse 11. This book collects the essence of the scriptures, teaching devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord. Bhagavad Bhakti Shastranam Ayam Sarasya Sangraha. These essential teachings I have personally realized under the shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I received them from his dear devotee, Sri Rupa. Here Sanatana Goswami pays homage to his gurus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his younger brother, Sri Rupa Goswami. Even though Sri Rupa Goswami deals with that Sanatana as his guru.
So Sanatana is Rupa's diksha and Rupa is Sanatana's diksha? Or
is no, because they're all diksha disciples and siksha disciples of Lord Chaitanya. Like that.
Yeah.
But they're just seeing, you know, the others as guru, because there's so much to be learned.
Yeah.
Having only hinted at it before, Srila Sanatana Goswami now officially declares the theme of his book, Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, sometimes quotes scriptural texts directly, sometimes interweaves selected phrases and words, and sometimes paraphrases to express scriptural ideas. It is absolutely authoritative. however, because it distills the essential teachings of Vedic literature. Right, so
because this is the conclusion, the ideas in your invocation that should at some point understand what's the full, because you have to give the background, everything like that, then you'll understand. Because now that you've established the supremacy of devotional service, now you can say this book is just about the essence of devotional service collected from all the other scriptures.
Okay. Verses 12 to 14. The ancient history of this book.
You may have been right about the the time frame here.
He's not coming. Oh, because he was printed. Oh.
Sad. Looks like our pious credits weren't enough, so. Yes. Okay, it's tomorrow, hopefully.
The ancient history of this book, 12 to 14. 12. May the Vaishnavas kindly hear this confidential scripture, Sri Bhagavatamrita. Jaimini Rishi spoke it to King Janamejaya in the enthusiasm of pure love. One of the elements of Anubandha Chatushtaya, the four essential elements of a work, is Adhikari, or the qualification of the reader. Here Sanatana Goswami suggests that the book is intended for Vaishnavas. Laghu Bhagavatamrita strove to validate Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord. This book begins with the fact as a starting point, particularly in its later chapters. This book deals with the intimate dealings of Krishna and his consorts. Right? One who lacks this requisite faith risks misunderstanding the pastimes and committing offenses. So this is written first, then by writing the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, then you qualify people to be able to appreciate Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Hmm? Does that make sense? So just like Rupa Goswami writes his books, and then Jiva Goswami then would give the background information required to be qualified to appreciate Rupa Goswami's works. Right? So it's a standard process. So it's not that something's missing, something's lacking, is because you're focusing just on that. Then those who have the qualifications, great. Those who don't, then by adding this other literatures, then you have the qualifications.
The support.
Yeah, the support. Yes.
This Jaimini, is it the same one that...
Jaimini Rishi, yes.
Same one that is...
Yes, yes. See, the element is there is that these great personalities, they know the actual philosophy, but they're presenting that aspect for those who don't. Right? Because the whole idea is that with the six systems of philosophy, there is no other elements of philosophy. There's nothing missing in these with the that combination of all six. So all those aspects are in Vedanta. So someone who wants it in its pure form, its natural form, then Vedanta is the thing. But those who can only accommodate a portion of that, then these others. So Jaimini is the biggest of them, of the non-Vedanta, because they'll accept all the verses. Right? While then below him, the other four schools, they'll only accept... It's not that they reject... It's they only deal with certain verses. They don't necessarily study Paul, but they just focus on certain ones that support. Well, Jaimini can work with everything, and Vedanta can work with everything. But Jaimini will interpret it with the point of fruitive benefit. While Vedanta will work with renunciation, right? But the actual true Vaishnava commentaries on Vedanta, then they go beyond into bhakti. Right, so there isn't anything outside of this. So then everything is accommodated. So people therefore will stay to the Vedas and remain austic. Right? Otherwise, if they don't, they'll come up with their own philosophies and that and become Gnostic. So they'll be outside the Vedic paradigm. And then the difficulty is then all the elements are supportive. You know, they mentioned before. What was that? Yeah, ritual worship, social duties. Your Lordship, persons who chant the holy name of your Lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities, fire sacrifices, achieved all good manners of the Aryans. Right? So, how will they have gotten that if they're Gnostic? Right? So that's the whole thing. If they stick to the Vedic, then there's more of a chance that they will come in contact with pure devotees. It's just like this. Let's say, on one level, maybe now is less because of the modern influence, but let's say when you came to the India in the 70s, technically speaking, as you go down the street and chant that, practically anybody on the street would invite you to their house. So you could go and do a program at anybody's house. They would invite all their friends. In the earlier days in the temple, that was major preaching. Remember in Calcutta, is that they would always go out to people's houses. Right? So you do a program in somebody in a life member's house, and you tell them, invite all their friends. So you'll come, there'll be like 50 people there. And these are all, you know, very well-situated people and their families. So then, you know, and why are they doing that? Because they're interested in pure unalloyed devotional service? No, because they're practicing Hindus who respect sadhus, like to hear philosophy, you know, like to give in charity, you know, distribute prasad, all these things that are standard parts of the cult. So because of that, therefore, they're coming in contact with the devotees and then hearing about pure devotional service. Right? But now, if they take up a Gnostic lifestyle, then there's no question. It's like, you know, you can walk down the street in New York, no one's going to invite you into their house. You know? Yeah, it means that... And you can say, well, that's because they're city people. You go out into the country, then, you know, they'll come out with their shotguns, you know. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just not going to, you know, when you get closer to the Vedic, then there's a little bit more of that. You know, I've heard, like, Somakha Maharaj was saying in the 70s. Yeah, 70s, even 80s. They would do this kind of like, you know, programs village to village, like that. And, you know, they dress as devotees, and then you go into these little villages, you know, and everybody sits around outside on the patios, and then they always, you know, if it's me, they always invite them up, you know, they're walking by, just they're walking by. Hey, come, you know, we're eating, come eat something. Like that. But he says, you know, but that's the only place I've heard of that they do like that. I'm sure that there's other places that do, but... But still, you have to get closer to where it's a, you know, the more older cultural elements. Like that. Sorry? Yes, you have to do Pariyatra Ninda is very easy. Yeah, otherwise you have to go to other places that have similar... You know, they do Pariyatra in other places, it's favorable in that, but you don't get the cultural response. Definitely people notice, definitely in the articles, people are hearing. So there's benefit. But the cultural response is less. But if you do it in places where you have these more older cultures, then there'll be more that kind of, you know, appreciation and stuff. So the whole idea is that, therefore, that's why you will have personalities like Jaimini, Gotama, and Vaisheshika, writing, documenting these philosophies, because then at least it keeps people within following the Vedic culture, and then there's more chance of them taking up pure devotional service. Otherwise, if they don't, very minimal. Right? You know, in the last thousands of years within the Indian scene, then so many people have come in contact with devotional service because that's their interest. But if you look at so many thousands of years in the Western culture, who's come in contact with pure devotional service, right? You know, and anybody talked about it, you know, then the church let them know that, you know, stop talking about this, otherwise we'll have a little bonfire in your honor. Yes. Yes, like that.
Guest of honor.
Yes, you'll be the central guest of honor. Yes.
Is it fair to say that
enjoyment is government's property and Vedanta's liberty?
Basically. Basically, you'll say, but Nivriti, the real point of Vedanta is Nivriti, meaning it's devotional service. But you can interpret it also as one of the mundane philosophies. Yes, just in other words, that's the thing, is that one is karma, one's jnana. But actually, the real point is that it's engaging all your activities in the Lord's service with detachment, because the results are for Krishna's pleasure. So that's how you can get six bogus philosophies, or you can say, there's the five, and then there's Vedanta, like that. So depending, you'll see that in the discussions, it'll go either way. Sometimes there's Vaishnavism, and then the six schools. Yeah. And then sometimes it's within the six schools, there's Vaishnavism, and then the other five. Right? Is it
that we also sometimes hear that you have Mayavad, four sampradayas, and Gaudiya?
Yes, that's the six systems of Vedantic philosophy. You have six Vedic philosophies. Of that, Vedanta is one. Within Vedanta, you have six systems. Like that. So Gaudiya is one. So that will be a Chintavedic. It'll include all the others. It'll accommodate all them. Like that. Okay. Moreover, the identities of the original speakers of this scripture are significant. Firstly, the speaker, Jaimini Rishi, is a disciple of Srila Vyasadeva, and the sage to whom was entrusted the teaching of the Sama Veda. This affirms his position as a great devotee, for it is said in Bhagavad Gita, among the Vedas, I am the Sama Veda. Because right? Amongst the Vedas, he's the Rig Yajra and Sama, but of those three, he's Sama. Like that. Bhagavad Gita 10:22. Secondly, the listener, King Janamejaya, was the son of Maharishi Parikhit, who heard the entire Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. Janamejaya. I wonder if that's a short form. You sure? Okay. Himself heard the entire Mahabharata from the mouth of Vaishampayana, also Srila Vyasa's disciple. Right? So he's used to hearing from Vyasadeva's disciples. Text 13. After Janamejaya, the son of Parikhit, heard the wonderful Mahabharata recited by the great sage Jaimini, Janamejaya was still eager to hear more, and so he inquired about the supplement, Kila, to that epic, right? Because the kilas are supplements. They're small. That I know of the standard, you know, except there's 90 of them, and they get their supplements would go into real detail and everything like that. You know, it's what's not brought out in the main scripture, then it'll be brought out in these kilikas. So that's why some storytellers who are very, you know, who are not just on the village level, but who are scholars, they know these. And so when they tell histories, they tell all kinds of things you never heard of. Like that. Okay, 13. Today, there is only one version of the Mahabharata extant. Vaishampayana, as he heard it from his spiritual master, Srila Dwaipayana Vyas. According to Vaishampayana, however, besides this narration, there are other authentic versions of the history. And what it means is kilas are their supplements. So they're just like, let's say, Ramayana. It has these supplements as the Uttara Ramayana. You know, and then there's Ananda Ramayana. There's, I can't remember, there's a whole bunch of them. So all it is disciples of, what was the Rishi? Valmiki. Then from hearing the Ramayana from him, then one of them takes just all the nice stories, and that's called Ananda Ramayana, right? There's no not the elements of separation or this, that, just all the really nice, pleasant, happy elements like that. Someone else takes other aspects like this. So these are supplements. So then those add to the main. They're not alternative scriptures. Does that make sense? The Kila is not another script that set, it's just bringing out detail or certain ways to compile, or, you know, there's different. So details in certain stories are there. That's what they're all about. Jana Majaya, okay. Yes, you could say. These were kilas, like that. There's other terms used for them also. Kila. Like that. Basically, you could say. Yeah, there's supplementary literatures. Like you could say, as you have Prabhupada Lilamrita. Then you have these other books that are supplements because they bring out various aspects. You know, some more detail of when Prabhupada was in London, or when he was in Australia, or when he was in this particular place, or a particular, you know, pastime, or things like that. So those of you that, yes, like that. So it's not that they're alternatives, because those ones don't tell the whole thing. They're only, so they're called, technically those are supplements. So you'd want to say Prabhupada Lilamrita and all those together. Then you could say that that's the complete, but because they're scriptures, they're left in their own place. But someone who's telling the story, they're good at telling the stories. Then they can be telling from the main frame and then bring in all these others from different places. Okay. You know, and then you get a very, you know, so that would be, that's the system. So these storytellers, that they know the main scripture perfectly, and then they know all these supplementary, so then when they tell the stories, they have so much detail in everything. So, yeah. Just as Vaishampayana's Mahabharata had a supplement, Kila, known as Harivamsa. Janamejaya is here inquiring whether there exists an equivalent supplement to Jaimini's recollection, recitation of the Mahabharata. The result is Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. Right? So, does that make sense? So, because Janamejaya, So Janamejaya, he's asking, what is the essence of this Mahabharata? Right? Because Harivamsa, then that gives the, you know, very essential points. Does that make sense? It's like, I think for the Vishnu Purana, then the, oh man, forget all this stuff. The Shris, for them it's very important. Yeah, Vishnu Dharmotra. So that'll be like a supplement or an Upa Purana. So with that you get more detail for appreciating Vishnu Purana. Like that. And Harivamsa is then for appreciating Mahabharata. So he's asking here if he said, Sri Janamejaya said, O Brahmana, by hearing the Mahabharata from Vaishampayana, I never attained the same relish I have now attained by hearing from you. Please complete this recitation with perfect sweetness. It is evident that King Janamejaya preferred the second version of the Mahabharata, Jaimini's, based on this testimony as attested by Sanatana Goswami. Jaimini's recitation more openly revealed the transcendental taste of loving service rendered to Krishna. Right, like in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, then all that is Mahabharata. It's the same thing from basically the whole history of all the Pandavas, but all within the realm, the context of devotional service. So knowing that, you know the Mahabharata, you just don't know all the details, which generally are not necessarily as, how do you say, spiritual. There's some that are, you know, very, very just pious, that's all. And sometimes in there the difficulties come up, and those practicing this pious culture, if they're not necessarily devotees, that they get distracted by all these six qualities of lust, anger, you know, greed, attachment, illusion, and madness. Right? You know, so those kinds of things come up. Yes?
I read a book once by the grandfather of B.B. Rama. He was saying, he made a reference to J.
Jaimini's Mahabharata.
Okay.
So that was written about 150 years ago maximum. So it's not so long ago that it seemed to be still available in the Jaimini's Mahabharata.
Yeah. No, before there were, I think, Madhvacharya, there were 40 versions, but which one was Vyas, that one he was figuring out. So.
It seems to have a lot
of time. Yeah. Yeah, so that, but unfortunately, we have it here, you know. So, in other words, the essence of that we have here. So, even if we don't have the literature, we have it. Yeah, but he seemed to have done a lot. So he has the Jaimini Sutras in the philosophy, but he's also, I think, done astrology. You know, so he's done a lot. He's actually quite scholarly. Like this. The first version, Mahabharata, originally transmitted by Srila Vyasadeva, was conceived for a broader audience. Quote, out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that he would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born, Srimad-Bhagavatam 1.4.25. Sri Krishna's supremacy is downplayed in the course of this particular narration. In contrast, Jaimini's Mahabharata appears to be purely devotional scripture on the sublime level of Srimad-Bhagavatam. Right? Because, you know, Vyasa has written the Srimad Bhagavatam, so now if you look at it, you'll tell it from that perspective. Just like we tell Mahabharata stories, generally we don't get into it with so much of the side stories. You know, because it, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay? A little better reaction than Holmes. Okay. Uttar inquires from her son, Parikit, 15 to 17. Jaimini said, by hearing the instructions of Sukadeva Goswami, Sriman Parikit was relieved of all fear, all his ambitions satisfied. He was absorbed in pure love for Sri Krishna. Now, as the time came near for the king to ascend to the destination he desired, his mother, Virata's daughter, a surrendered devotee of Krishna, approached him in great distress while he was alone. After Parikit had consoled and pleased her by his greetings, she asked him as follows, immersed in love for her son. Similar to Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, Brihad Bhagavatamrita now enters a dialogue within a dialogue. Jaimini Rishi is relating the confidential history of what took place after Jaimini's father. Maharaj Parikit concluded his 7 days of hearing Bhagavatam. Uttara Devi was aware that her beloved son was fasting until death, and was not long for this world. Yet desired to spend the remaining time together as follows. 18. The blessed Uttara said, my dear son, please extract the essence of what Sukadeva has taught you and quickly reveal it to me, as if churning the nectar of immortality from the ocean of milk. This verse reveals the literal meaning behind the book's title, Bhagavatamrita. Sri Uttara was not present for Sukadeva Goswami's 7-day Bhagavatam recitation, but is eager to hear those teachings. However, she doesn't have 7 days. Her son Parikit could meet his fate at any moment. Therefore, just as the vast ocean of milk was churned for its immortal nectar, Amrita, Uttara Devi requests her son to extract the essence of Bhagavatam. In order to oblige his mother, Parikit Maharaj must now shift role from listener to speaker, carefully considering how an already condensed work like Bhagavatam can be condensed further, without losing its power and import. By referring to the ocean of milk, Uttara Devi is herself acknowledging the vast scope of this task. Bhagavatam is already the cream of Vedic knowledge. Sarva Vedi
Vede tihasanam sharam sharam samudritam. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.41. Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to the cream of the milk. The Vedic literature is like the milk ocean of knowledge. Cream or butter is the most palatable essence of milk, and so also is Srimad Bhagavatam, for it contains all palatable, instructive, and authentic versions of different activities of the Lord and his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.41 purport.
That's why one should not be too opposed to butter and cream. Otherwise, then one can't appreciate the example.
How does one go about extracting the essence from the essence? Right? Because already the Vedic literature is Bhagavatam's the essence. Now he has to extract the essence from that. Right? From where to begin? Certainly the 10th canto represents the apex of bhakti. Yet Sukadeva Goswami spent 9 cantos getting there, despite his rapidly approaching date with Takshaka. Maharaj Prickett did not hesitate to rise to his mother's rise to his mother's challenge.
His date with Takshaka.
Okay. 19. Sri Jaimini said, King Parikit, feeling affection for his mother, answered her respectfully, eager to enjoy recounting the wonderful narrations he had just heard about Lord Govinda. Sri Parikit, known as Vishnu Ratha, said, Mother, at a time like this, one should observe silence. But your delightful question impels me to speak. Right? Because technically silence means if you're talking about the Lord. So the normal thing is one would be silent, because otherwise who knows what people are going to talk about. Right? But here then, if one is discussing about the Lord, then that's perfect. That's perfect silence. After 7 days of continuous hearing, Maharaj Prika was neither tired nor hungry, nor thirsty. His enthusiasm for hearing and chanting Krishna's glory had only increased, similar to Narad Muni's experience recounted in the first canto. Quote, O Vyasadeva, in that association by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna, and thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.26. Furthermore, Bhagavatam states, O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.16. This taste, compounded by his natural empathy for his mother, inspired to share his realization of Bhagavatam with exuberance.
Right, because his mother is a devotee. She wants to know. Like that. Because we see his Bhagavatam, when the first story in Bhagavatam, you know, actually after you hear about how Bhagavatam is coming about, then it's about Uttara. Right? She's approaching Krishna. Like that. Yeah? Yeah. So then, you know, we can understand her position.
So it seems that, yeah. For 21 to 23. I shall speak by the mercy of my spiritual master, Srimad Bhadarayani, Sukadeva Goswami. First, let me offer respects to our Lord and Master, Sri Achyuta, who granted the gift of life to you and your son. His compassionate grace inspired the best of his pure devotees in the great effort to extract the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. The greatest sages have approved this resulting work, which is full of confidential truth. Please listen with attention as I faithfully repeat it to you. So worshipping Lord Madhava at Prayaga, 24 to 38. This section marks the beginning of Narad Muni's spiritual odyssey. Sanatan Goswami presents us with our first candidate for the title of best devotee. 24 to 25. Once a group of exalted sages were at Prayag, the best of pilgrimage sites, right? Because it's short time, so we see there's not these overly long, openings to establish and everything like that. Because when you're doing a written work, you can afford to do that. But here, because, as it's mentioned, the date with Takshaka, you never quite know exactly, so therefore, then. Yeah, you have to get down to the essence quite quickly. Yeah.
The story, like we know that Suga Goswami was present when Srimadagna was described. Then who was present when Jagannath
Prabhu was described as the Not sure. No, it doesn't seem to. Because, you do have the Jaimini's telling this. So maybe Jaimini was about it. Like that. Who knows? He said, everybody who was anybody was there in the universe, so like that. So, this is one of those who don't really worry about it.
But then how Sanatana Goswami got to know from Jaimini?
That's why we don't get involved in it. Because then we're only dealing with externals of time.
Maybe Jaimini should hear another scripture or something?
Maybe, but the thing is we're worried about connecting it logically according to time and space. That's the difficulty that will come up. But the point is, these personalities being present, at all these times, it's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? Is that you have the Krishna and his associates. They expand in their associates in Dwarka. And so technically this is these are Dwarka pastimes. Right? Because Purikit Maharaj and all them, they're all from that seed. Does that make sense? And so then, that those associates would be there at that time, since everybody who was anybody was there for the discussion of Mahabharata. I mean, they came from all over the universe, so.
Anyway, they had a vision and...
That's there, but I'm saying that there is, if it means, if you want to connect them like that, you can do that. But my point is, it's not important that this is why it happened. The importance is here's a scripture that gets down to the essence of bhakti that is described in the Bhagavatam. That's the real point.
It is saying like in Srimad Bhagavatam, it meets different yugas and everything. So we cannot, it is not goes in such a way.
Chronological. That's there, but that. But
it's not goals. It just goes with the questions of attachment.
Yes.
About their sense, what he's saying about internal to understand bhakti.
Yes. Yeah. It's just what works for the story. So if we have this, then be happy. If one has to make these chronological connections, then one may miss the point that it's about bhakti, that's not about, well, how did he know? Because there's so many things is maybe he doesn't want us to know.
It doesn't matter.
That's just a couple of more. Okay. Once a group of exalted sages at Prayag, the best of pilgrimage sites, during the month of Magh. Oh, we're at Prayag, okay, during the month of Magh. The sages had taken their bath and were happily seated before the deity of Sri Madhava. Feeling satisfied as if all their goals in life had been fulfilled, they were praising one another, saying, "You are the recipient of Lord Krishna's mercy." Immediately we are presented with the transcendental character and activities of the Vaishnavas. Firstly, they are humble and satisfied. Secondly, they reside in holy places and worship the deity form of the Lord. The values are evidenced by the fact that their highest praise for each other is, you are the Lord's dearmost devotee. Prayag is called Tirtha Murdhanya, the chief of holy places, because it is located at the confluence of the rivers Ganga and Jamuna. The sages were there at the most auspicious time for bathing, the month of Magh, January, February. Because in bathing you have Magh, Kartik, and the Purushottam month. Or also, Vaishak. Like these three, it's like if you really want to get the benefit of bathing in one of these times, you bathe at all the others also. Mm-hmm. Like just like Purushottam month, you bathe in the Ganga during that time. You get the most benefit if you also bathe during Magh and Magh, Kartik, and Vaishak. So each one of them has their benefit, but you get but if you do all of them, that's better.
This time in the month of Magh, typically when the sun is not
there. Yeah, basically, but it's also the coldest time, right? Vaishak is the hottest time, and Kartik is the in between time. Yeah. So yeah.
As Dattatreya, the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, explains in Padma Puran, the Supreme Lord Madhava is not as pleased by vows, charity, or austere penances as by one simply taking a bath in the month of Magh. Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, 126.8. Because you really have to focus if you want to take bath in the month of Magh. Sri Madhava is the presiding deity of the Prayag Tirtha.
It's a temple of him. It's on the other side, so most don't necessarily go to the temple. But it's the side where everybody bathes. The temple's on the other side, like that small temple. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Maybe good thing you don't all go.
Sorry?
Maybe good thing you don't all go.
Yeah.
It's a small temple.
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.